and they're going to talk about the geometric graphs and linear graphs. So so the first I give a general introduction about reconfiguration of geometric objects. So this is really a broad idea. It includes all sorts of problems such as DNA sequences. You can think about them as geometric objects where you have little fractions of a DNA and you want to assemble them to have a complete sequence, but there could be several ways to do it, and you would want to find the shortest one. It's, of course, a very difficult problem. It's usually modeled in computer science with rank tiles, which are much simpler objects, but they can lead to quite complicated things. For instance, there are acyclic tiling of the plane with 13 rank tiles, but it's also not something I want to mention. Reconfiguration also could be robot arm motion planning, where you have some robot arm with rigid bars and joints, and you want to find whether one position it can move from one configuration or position to another one with a continuous motion, but it's not always possible. Or the same idea works for the Rubik cube, where you have a huge number of different configurations, and you might wonder what is the shortest way to move from one to the other. I think it was just last year, and it was the diameter of the Rubik cube graph was determined that you can move from any position to any other in 20 moves. Simple example of the same thing is matchstick puzzles, when you have matches and you have some specific tasks to complete with a finite number of matches. And this is already very similar to geometric graphs, where we also have little edges, not necessarily the same length, though, triangulation, pseudo-triangulation, polygons, or matchings. And again, we want to do reconfiguration of these graphs with simpler moves. For instance, triangulations, a simple move could be an edge flip, removing one edge and putting it back in the other way. For pseudo-triangulation, these are pseudo-triangles, here each bounded face is a pseudo-triangle, can also define edge flips, where the idea is the same, remove one edge and put it back in the other way in a pseudo-quadrilateral. For polygons, we can use pops, which is something similar to rigid motion. And for matchings, we can have compatible matchings, where it means that we put in a disjoint compatible matching and take out the original matching. So again, we can move from one matching to another. So let's get back to triangulation, which is a classical example of this reconfiguration problem. We have two copies of the same point set in the plane, and we want to reconfigure one triangulation into another. Question is how long it takes if you are only allowed to use single edge flips. For instance, in example, we can flip the edges one after the other until some point we find out that the two graphs are the same. And in general, it's known that the one can always go from any triangulation to any other triangulation in a quadratic number of edge flips, and this is best possible in the worst case. Well, you can represent this with a triangulation graph or the graph of triangulations, where it's constructed for a fixed point set, and every node of this graph corresponds to one triangulation, and two of them are connected by an edge if a single edge flip goes from one triangulation to the other. So for this example, this whole thing would be the graph. But in general, for n points, it has an exponential number of vertices. The number of vertices depends on the point configuration. It could be it's always less than 30 to the n, which is also a result from last year by Adam Schaefer and Michal Sharir. And the diameter is just the number of edge flips that we need, and this was a previous slide that it's quadratic. So I'd like to do something similar for matchings. So now the graphs are not triangulation, but simple drawings of perfect matchings in the plane, crossing free drawings. So again, we have two identical point sets. or two copies of the same point set and two matchings, two perfect matchings on them. And it was shown that it's so we want to move from one to the other with compatible matching. So in every step, we want to add a new matching and delete the old one. So this can be done in a logarithmic number of steps, going from one to the other. It was a result by Eichholzer and others. So one way to do it is just draw a diagonal or bisector, vertical bisector, this line in both cases, and a lemma shows that one can find a compatible matching that doesn't cross the halving line. So for instance, here for each of the two matchings, the red matching doesn't have any edges crossing the vertical line, the halving line. And if we repeat this idea, then we end up with a matching that where consecutive vertices, so vertices with consecutive x coordinates are connected or matched. So obviously they have to be the same matching in both cases, and it takes log n steps. There's a lower bound as well that for some pairs of matching you can't do it in less than log n over log n steps. So you can also represent this as a compatible matching graph where for a given point set, the nodes correspond to all possible crossing-free matchings, and two of them are connected if the two matchings are compatible, which means that the two matchings, no edge from one matching crosses any edge from the other matching. And again, the diameter of this graph is the number of steps that we need. Well, if you think about it, two compatible matchings together form a union of simple polygons, but it also includes two gons, like this one, if the two matchings have contain the same edge. If you want to avoid such two gons, we come to the definition of disjoint compatible matchings, where we want that the two polygons two matchings should give a union of simple polygons, so no two gons are allowed. But this is not always possible. So there is a matching for which there's no disjoint compatible matching. The simplest example is this, where we have points in convex position, and if we want to construct a disjoint compatible matching, then these two vertices have no choice. They have to be connected to the neighboring one. They don't see anything else. And if we continue this, then at the end we just cannot connect this last edge to anything. And this is not the only example. There's another family of construction where we have long line segments that define faces, and in each face we add a very short little segment. So this is one matching, and the total number of edges is odd again, and it turns out that if you look at any of these short segments, it can only be connected, the two endpoints can only be connected to vertices on the boundary of the cell that it contains, and since there are more cells than segments, at the end we have a segment that cannot be connected to anything, so there's no compatible disjoint matching for this either. For any odd number of segments, there is such a configuration, but for even number of segments, there could be one. And there I come to our main result that it's only this, that for an even set of segments, there exists a disjoint compatible matching. So the people were working on this for more than 5 years, and finally now we have results. So this is how it looks. And in terms of this compatible matching graph, we can draw a disjoint compatible matching graph where now we don't connect all pairs of matching compatible pairs of matching, only those that are disjoint as well. So we have fewer edges, and the result says that if the number of edges in this matching is even, then this graph has no isolated node. So we still don't know, for instance, whether this graph is connected or not. We have no examples for any graph that any point configuration where this graph would not be connected, but there's no proof either. And I've shown many examples that if the number of segments is odd, then of course there can be isolated nodes. So we don't know whether it's connected or not, and if yes, it would be interesting what's the diameter. So let me tell you something about the proof technique that we use. We use convex decompositions for line segments, and this is a general proof technique that was used for many other purposes. One of the most classical application of convex decomposition is the art gallery type problems, where you have a simple polygon and you want to place guards, point guards that jointly visually cover everything. The most elegant and well-known proof of by Fisk is construct a triangulation. The dual graph of the triangulation is a graph where the nodes correspond to the triangles, and two of them are connected by an edge if the triangles are adjacent, so share an edge. And this allows us to do a consistent coloring, three coloring of the vertices, where every triangle has all three colors. And that means that each color class has a vertex adjacent to each of the triangles. So if you put guards at vertices of the same color, they cover everything. So we can just choose the smallest color class, and that's n over 3 at most. So the same visibility type argument and convex decomposition works for line segments as well. So Joe O'Rourke proved that the free space, if you want to guard the free space around disjoint line segments, you can do it in two-thirds ends with point guards, two-thirds end point guards. And the idea is very similar. You construct convex decomposition by extending each of the segments by array until the array hits another line segment or goes to infinity. And if you do this, we get exactly n plus 1 convex cells. And now the task is just to place point guards that jointly cover every convex cell. So of course, it would be wasteful to put one guard in each cell. You can cover a pair of cells with a single guard. But, so what we really need is to represent the adjacency. So we can have this dual graph where, again, the nodes correspond to the cells, and two of them are connected if they share a common boundary. So in this graph, we can find a large matching of size n over 3, roughly, because this graph is too connected and planar. It has to be proven. And then we can use Nishizaki-Bilbert's theorem to find a large matching. And once we have that, we can... So these bald edges are matching. We can just place guards at the point between two matched faces, and an extra guard any missing faces, and that's a guard set. So the problem, one problem with this, that some of the guards are sitting on the line segments. For instance, this one, the guard between these two cells has no option, it has to sit on one of the segments. If we want to avoid that, that's also possible. We need just a little more edges, but still roughly two-third n. But we need to define the dual graph differently. So again, we have the same convex decomposition, but now we connect two nodes by a dual edge if the two segments are adjacent and there's a segment endpoint on the boundary. So if there are two segment endpoints on the common boundary, then we can have double edges. That's fine. So we get a new type of dual graph, and this is now two edge connected and planar. And with the same argument, one can show that it has a large matching, and so this bald edges would be a large matching, and then we have guards sitting at the segment endpoints. So one can extend this idea, studying the exact same graph and for a different problem. So here the problem is that we, instead of the free space, we want to cover these actual segments from both sides. So think about it that these segments are walls in an art gallery, and instead of monitoring the entire floor of the gallery, we want to monitor only the walls because the precious paintings are hanging on the walls, so we only need to guard the walls, but from both sides. So the previous solution where the guards were sitting at the segment endpoints were not good for this because the segment endpoint doesn't see at all the two sides. So here we can do something else. So using Kanako's theorem, one can show, and with studying the properties of this graph and then skipping over several pages of proofs here, one can show that this dual graph contains a path decomposition into paths of lengths at least 3. So for instance, this bald edges would be a decomposition of the graph into a path with 3 nodes here and another path of 4 nodes over here. And then studying the structure of these cells, one can show that for if you have 3, 4, or 5 adjacent cells, then 2, 3, or 4 point guards are enough to guard the entire boundary, so even both sides of each line segment if it's on the common boundary. So in this example, for instance, the guards would sit somewhere very close to the segment. So this guard, for instance, sees the entire side of this wall, and the opposite side is seen by this guard. That's just So and with this argument, you get an exact bound of roughly four fifths. Then another problem that also uses convex decomposition of these joint line segments is this, where we think about these segments as a perfect matching, so geometric graph, and you want to augment it into a spanning tree. So of course it's possible, you can just add extra edges until everything is connected, but one can do a little better. You can control the maximum degree of this graph. And the best one can do is degree 3. So there are examples that show that a set of segments cannot always be completed into a Hamiltonian cycle, but degree 3 spanning tree of degree 3 is possible. And one of the shortest proofs that we are not showing completely, just the main idea, uses convex partition. So the idea is that you construct the same convex partition as before and add new edges between different segments only inside the convex cells. So if you do this, for instance, in this cell, then there are 3 segments endpoint on the boundary. By adding one extra edge, we can connect all 3 of them. So one connection is already there. And the same here, we need to add 2 extra edges to connect all 3 segment endpoints on the boundary of this cell. So if you do that for every cell, you get a connected graph, and of course it contains a spanning tree as well by dropping some of the edges. So this idea right now gives an upper bound on the degree of 5, and with an extra trick one can reduce it to 3. So and one can even get one additional property apart from maximum degree 3. One can make sure that in this spanning tree, every vertex will be pointed. So pointed means that each of these vertices will be adjacent to one angle of at least pi, so more than pi, so one reflex angle. How does that work? So for the same convex partitioning, we define a new type of dual graph that assumes first an assignment. So first, we assign every segment endpoint to one of the 2 adjacent cells. So there are many ways to do that, exponential number of different assignments. And then we construct the dual graph such that each segment endpoint is connected to one of these nodes. So you can think about these segments as a connection that connects one side to another. Well, maybe it would be better to see this segment, for instance, where it connects one adjacent cell to another going through the entire segment. So that's why it's called a tunnel graph. And that's a non-trivial claim that one can choose the assignment of the segment endpoint so that this tunnel graph is connected. But once we have this connected tunnel graph, you can just replace each of these nodes by straight line edges and add edges in each of the faces. And since each of the segment endpoint is assigned only to one side, the new edges will only lie on one side, and there will be one reflex angle facing the other side. Right? So this kind of ideas are used for the proof of the disjoint compatible matching conjecture as well. So again, we have this set of disjoint line segments in the plane, and our goal is to find the disjoint compatible matching. So another matching, another perfect matching that doesn't share any of the current edges with this. And we started a convex decomposition, but we allow more freedom. So it turns out that the same type of decompositions are not good enough, but it's going to be on another side. And we define a dual graph, as usual. So every node corresponds to a cell, and two of them are adjacent, are connected by an edge if there's a common segment endpoint on the boundary. So each segment endpoint corresponds to exactly one new edge. It can have double edges if the entire segment is on the common boundary. The disjoint compatible matching conjecture can be reduced to this, so an even orientation. So if we have an even orientation in this graph, so what is an even orientation? Even orientation is an orientation of the edges such that the in degree of every node is even. So once we have such an even orientation, then we can think about an oriented edge going through the segment endpoint as an assignment, that we assign this segment endpoint to the face to which the edge is oriented to. So then we get such an assignment to of segment endpoints to faces. And because it was an even orientation, every face is assigned to an even number of segment endpoints. So now we can match up the segment endpoint within each of the faces, and we get a new matching, which is compatible. So there can't be any crossing because the new edges are inside the convex faces. The only problem is that it might not be disjoint. And this happens if exactly two endpoints, segment endpoints, are assigned to a face, and there are two endpoints of the same segment. Then we have no choice. We have to match these two segment endpoints inside that face, and then the new matching will not be disjoint. So this happens in this example three times, four times. But Eichholzer and others observed that if we are able to construct an even orientation, avoiding these bad cases where two endpoints of the same segment are assigned to this to one cell and nothing else, then we have a compatible disjoint matching. So this is exactly what we prove here, that there exists an even orientation. So two things: that for geometric matching with an even number of segments, there exists a convex partition. It does matter which one. We can't just choose an arbitrary one, and the dual graph has an even orientation with this property that we need. So let's just start with an arbitrary convex partition. If we just extend all segments to the straight line until this hits another segment or to infinity, then again we get convex decomposition with n plus 1 cells. And Eichholzer and others conjecture that this already works. So this graph will always have a good even orientation. And it turns out that that's not true. So Marwan Aljoubi, a master's student at Tufts University, found a counterexample. This is rather symmetric, but one can show by examining several cases, I'm not going to do all cases, that no matter how you drew this extension, so the dual graph would still depend on how, in which order the extensions are made. So in, for instance, this is one possibility. There won't be any such orientation. For instance, here, it's not even true that the dual graph is two edge connected. Because for instance, here this cell is adjacent to exactly one node, so it's not, it can have a degree at most one. All right. This shows that just doing an arbitrary convex decomposition is not always good, but it's possible that there's another type of convex partition that will work. And so this is outline of this proof that we want to show that there's a that convex decomposition is a, and an even orientation that we need. And for this, so we show that there's a convex decomposition where the dual graph contains two edge disjoint spanning trees, and once we have that, we are able to orient the edges of the entire graph to have this extra property. Whenever the in-degree is 2, the 2 in-degree doesn't come from the same segments, or that we can just represent in a set of conflict pairs. So in this FSEC setup, when we only look at the dual graph, we have already no memory where the actual segments were. So we represent the this property by a collection of conflict pairs. So we just say that some pairs of edges should not be matched in the dual graph, right? The first step of this scheme is the construction of a convex decomposition where the dual graph contains two edge disjoint spanning trees. So for this we need to define a broad family of convex decompositions that includes this decomposition where we just extend segments by straight line edges, but a lot more. So in general, it works like this: that every segment endpoint emits one outgoing edge, and if two of these edges meet, then one of them ends and the other one continues, just like in the previous examples. So the out degree of any Steiner point is one, exactly one. And whenever such an extension hits a line segment, then it doesn't continue. So the out degree of the Steiner points on the line segment is just zero. So this is really generalized is the previous decompositions, but it has this extra property that whenever two extensions meet at a Steiner point, the outgoing edge could go in any direction as long as all the angles are convex. So this already gives a fair amount of freedom, and we have one additional freedom in this general class of decomposition, that we are allowed to have sinks. For instance, this is a sink, and also when we have a tree of extensions, then we can move the sinks anywhere. So it doesn't matter whether a sink is here or there, just by changing the orientation, we can move it anywhere in a large connected component of extensions. So all this is used in the proof, but probably I'm not going to discuss that in the talk in detail. And in this setup, it's fairly easy to count the number of cells. So if you just have straight line extensions, the number of cells would be n plus 1, one more than the number of segments. But here, for every sink, we essentially lose one outgoing edge. So we have a number of segments plus 1 minus the number of sinks. So this is the number of nodes. However, the number of edges in this dual graph is always the number of segment endpoints. So once we have sinks, we have more edges than required for two spanning trees. So how do we generate a convex decomposition that we need? Well, this is done with an algorithm with several augmenting steps or correcting steps. So we started out with a left-right decomposition, where first extend every segment to the left. So whenever two extensions meet, then one of them has priority arbitrarily and continues, and the other stops. And in a second step, extend every segment to the right with the same rule. This, of course, falls into this general class of decompositions, and we have no sinks. One nice thing about this general scheme, so extend left and then right, is that once we already have some sinks in our decomposition, we can construct such a decomposition for all other segment endpoints with the same idea. So just keep all these edges intact and extend the segments beyond their other endpoints or remaining endpoints. So first extend them to the left and then extend them to the right. So this would produce a convex decomposition, again, where all sinks are preserved, so the number of cells will be the same, because it only depends on the number of sinks, and everything else looks pretty easy or simple, because it comes from this very simple decomposition method. So another thing that I want to remind you is a sufficient and necessary condition for the existence of edge-disjoint spanning trees in a graph. So this is well known as Nash-Williams condition or Todd condition, that if a graph has edge-disjoint, a certain number of edge-disjoint spanning trees, if there's no obvious reason not to have them. So for instance, if we are looking for two edge-disjoint spanning trees, then we need that whenever we partition the nodes into families of vertex sets, then there are two times r minus one edges between these vertex families, because if there were fewer, then obviously there can't be two spanning trees between them. The spanning tree must have at least this many edges. So the nice thing about this condition, that this Nash-Williams condition, that this is sufficient, that once you have enough edges between any partition of the vertex set, then there must be two edge-disjoint spanning trees. Well, this is what we want to use, and then we need to, of course, we need to argue about any partition of the vertex set into vertex classes, and of course, we don't want to check all each and every one of them. But what does this mean in terms of the dual graph? So the vertex classes correspond to just some families of convex cells, and we can assume that each vertex class is connected in the dual graph, so that means that the corresponding region in the plane is also connected. So what we have is we have a partition of the plane into unions of convex cells, and we want to argue about the number of edges, dual edges, going between different cells. So for this reason, we need to study what happens on the boundary of these cells. Whenever there's a segment endpoint on the boundary, then the two edges, there's also an edge between the two adjacent cells. So it's a little bit of studying the topology. It was just one-dimensional or two-dimensional topology, so it's nothing really complicated. And studying the several cases, how these orientations can continue on the boundary. There could be holes in these regions that are not showing on the picture. It turns out that this can just formulate a lemma that it's enough to show that whenever we have VI nodes and S sinks associated to a cell, then there are at least this many edges, this many edges inside this component. So if there are few edges inside each component, there must be many edges going between different components. And this is the main idea. I'm not showing the proof for this. And again, for proving something, a bound like this, you still need to study different features that can happen on the boundary. So either an extension hits a segment, or two extensions meet and the common extension or the outgoing edge enters the interior of the cell, or it enters the exterior. So there are several features that we can distinguish, count them properly, And that's how we arrived to this lemma. So it turns out that the only bad situation that can happen is a simply connected region where the boundary is connected. So it's a compact, simply connected cell. There, the number of certain features that are, so number of C features is features of this type, number of D features is the features of this type. So there are very few of these features. And we call these curves critical. So you know, essentially, we can prove that if there's no critical curve on, along the boundaries of the convex cells, then there are two Edge-Dijkstra spanning trees. So nothing else can go wrong. And there's also a very intuitive interpretation of these critical cells. Practically means just reinterpreting what these different features encode is that we have a union of cells where, where from the boundary there's no way out. So there's no edge oriented out from to the exterior of this cycle. That would be a zero critical cell. And another family of this curve is the simple connected curve where the only way out to the exterior leads along one of the original line segments, so either here or here. This is the only way where one could walk out if we follow directed edges or line segments. So so the problem is really reduced to this, that we are given a set of line segments in the plane, and we want to construct convex decomposition by these oriented extensions such that in any closed curve, there must be at least two ways out going to infinity from the curve. And so how do we do that? We start with an arbitrary decomposition and then we modify it incrementally, increasing the size of the largest cycle using local modifications. So there are several local modifications and it's a complicated algorithm. I'm not going to show more details of it. I just show this single idea that, for instance, if you have this critical curve where you see there's no outgoing edge and the only way out goes along a given segment, then we can slightly modify the boundary. So in this case, this local modification would involve this. So change the boundary a little bit, and then we obtain a cycle that we're already one way out that doesn't go along a segment. So it's not critical anymore. And if you recursively resolve all the maximal size critical sets, then then everything can be resolved. So this is a several page proof that I'm not showing. So this is the first part of our argument, and then we need a second part that says that we already have a dual graph that contains two edge disjoint spanning trees, but we still need an even orientation with this required property that whenever the in degree is exactly two, then these two edges do not correspond to the same segment endpoints. You can just say it in another way that the two incoming edges are not in conflict. By maintaining a set of conflict pairs, I denote by X. So this is a second algorithm that is completely independent from the first part. So this is a graph algorithm. The geometry actually doesn't matter at all in this, so it doesn't even have to be a plane graph. It's not going to be a huge graph, but maybe it's not planar. And so the setup is this, that you have a graph that contains two edge disjoint spanning trees and perhaps some extra edges. These are drawn in black. And also we have these conflict pairs that we want an even orientation that whenever two edges are oriented to a node or exactly two, then those two are not in conflict. So for instance, for this node, if these two edges were oriented into the node and nothing else, that would be it would not satisfy the condition because that would be in conflict. So for this, we have an incremental algorithm that we look at each node separately and construct an orientation step by step. So I'm not going to write up the algorithm formally because that would take more time than we have. But just illustrate it on this particular example. So it works like this, that we choose a node that has degree 2 or 3, so very low degree, in the union of the two spanning trees. So this node has just degree 2. And then we get rid of this node, or resolve it, and orient the adjacent edges in some way. So in this case, we can just orient all of the edges away from. So we have now some partial orientation, and these edges are not edges anymore, because it doesn't matter that these are adjacent to this vertex that we already deleted, but we still have to keep track of this, that this there's one edge oriented into this node. And this has to be, so to have an even orientation at the end, there has to be an odd number of extra edges oriented into this node, right? So the next step would be, again, pick one node that is adjacent to two or three edges from the union of the two graphs, so this is adjacent to two. And again, we want to resolve this, but here one edge is already oriented in, so to have an even degree, we need at least another edge oriented in, and we want to make sure that there's no conflict, so this would be a good solution. So these two edges are oriented in and they're not in conflict, so we can just forget about them and continue on the rest of the graph. So this has again degree 2 and the union of the two spanning trees, and we can do this. So this this has degree 3 in the union of the two spanning trees, so two red edges and one blue, and it also already has two edges that are oriented in, but we cannot forget about these two again only. We cannot forget about these two only because they are in conflict. So if nothing else is oriented into this node, then we would be in trouble. They would be in conflict. But we can, so let's see, we can resolve this as well by forgetting about these two nodes. And here something interesting happens, that we essentially get rid of this node and think about this, the union of these two edges as a single edge in the red graph. So practically an edge can be merged into a union of two edges or a pass with two edges, and this is now considered as a single edge of the red tree. This gray node is just eliminated, and we can continue. And here again, we would do a similar step where this node is eliminated, and we have this long red edge between two surviving nodes. And if we do it again, then this whole thing would be a single red edge between these two surviving nodes. And at the end, it's resolved here, where we can get rid of this entire component with adding even orientation at every one of the nodes. And we end up with something like this. As you notice, some of the nodes have been split into several pieces. Now we can just merge them back. So this is several pieces, and we merge all the original edges and original nodes into a single node. So if there were no conflict before merging, then there will be no conflict after the merge either, because the only exclusion is that if the in degree is exactly two, then the two incoming edges should not be in conflict. So if this was true before merging nodes, then this remains true. And then we have a correct orientation of all the edges, and that's what we needed. So so this was just a demonstration how our algorithm works, and of course it takes a couple of pages to write this down, taking care of all cases. And okay, this is all I wanted to say. Thanks.